It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. Well, I was up to my keister in water last night.
Your keister?
6:30 at night. I'm deep in the mud trying to fix a water main break and having a great old time.
Here at your house?
Yeah.
In your house?
Outside my house, fortunately. There's a water main in the garden area, but...
Up to your keister?
You know,
dude, you're talking mid-range keister?
Yeah, a keister. Yeah, I mean, just we.
Keister's like above the knee, right?
Yeah, above the knee. Down my hands in the dirt, all cut up because all rocky, trying to dig down to the break. And
who broke it?
Well, Sarah and I had a lovely finish to the day yesterday. Took the dogs on a walk up of the foothills up above our home and just... You know, had a couple of miles of just walking the dogs and talking and came back. And it was sweet. And we were just going to eat a little kind of a brief dinner.
Get a little drink of water and whoops.
Got home. And the trash cans need to be hauled down from the top of the hill. So we're bringing the trash cans down to our house. And one of them fell over and hit this water spigot, a little plastic thing. And it just shattered the joint. Just shattered. It's just one of those freaky things that it had to hit it just right because it was not, it's one of those big trash cans on wheels, but still. And we got water spraying everywhere. And the problem is our water main is a quarter of a mile back up the street. I mean, it's not anywhere near the house, the main cutoff. And I don't even know which of the utility things it is up there. So, man, I'm going, after such a peaceful end of the day, this couldn't end well.
Glory, hallelujah.
So we got out there, got it shut off finally, start digging down to find out where the break is.
And gave you a geyser.
My neighbor, who's a construction guy, just was coming home as that was happening. So he just came over to talk to us a bit because I'd called him yesterday just to invite him out, he and his wife out for dinner sometime. And he came over to say, hey, I can't do the invitation. I said, what do you got here? I said, we broke the water, man. So I'm trying to fix this. You need some help? You got what you need? And we started looking through I had a bunch of sprinkler parts and whatever. So we're looking through everything. He goes, yeah, look, I got what you need. And he got involved digging with me. And so we sat there for about an hour and he helped me put the whole thing back together and glued it and... I was very gracious of him. I may know how to do that stuff because I used to do work in sprinklers one summer job I had. But
way back when.
It was a nice time with my neighbor. We've been trying to get him to dinner. Just a couple we've had a brief times with, but want to get to know him better and just had that on our heart. And
nothing like your water main breaking to bring you closer to your neighbor.
Oh, how gracious was he. I mean, he could have just ran inside screaming, hid out good, but he didn't.
That's awesome.
It was awesome. And so the day finished well anyway, but I would rather it finished after the walk would have been nice.
Yeah, you could have skipped the water main break.
Didn't need that last night for sure. But I got...
How's your keister?
Drier. You know how horrible it is to be up to your shoulders in mud... And have no
water. Up your shoulders?
I'm digging down my hands because it's all tied into this real tight... Like, I can't get a shovel in there, so I'm hand digging... And I'm up to my elbows in mud, and there's no water to wash myself off with. We got nothing.
There you go.
So I had to get water from the neighbor, and it was just one comedy of errors.
Woohoo!
And it was dark. He had one of those big industrial lights on a big pole. Brought this big light up there. We had this big bright light shining down. And
there you go.
That was very helpful, but not the way I chose to end the day.
Wait.
To me.
Well.
Hey, remember our friend, former pastor guy from Arizona? Who ended up emptying holding tanks on RVs? Remember?
Yes.
Yeah, or cleaning out holding
tanks.
Yes,
I was going to say.
And he wrote me. He said, this is not PC friendly. So if you're in the politically correct crowd, this may bother you. But I thought this was hilarious. He said, today I was cleaning an RV holding tank for a day work Mexican family. Only one spoke English. After 3 hours, she said, boy, that sure smells. Then added, that's a terrible job, but I guess somebody has to do it. With my doctoral degree in theology, I am finally qualified to do the work that illegals in Phoenix won't do. I finally arrived. That's hilarious. I've got the job that even illegals.
There you go. That's graduating to something special.
Wow. That's just funny. And I told him, I said,
Chief Engineer of Glorious Evacuations.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. But he's on a great journey. I mean, he and I keep in touch over some various emails, stuff going on with his family. It's all pretty cool. So
that's serious pastoral work.
That is serious.
In a prophetic dimension.
Serious stuff. No doubt about it. So that's a job I don't want.
No, I'm
glad he's being blessed with that.
That's like your sewer line breaking.
In all honesty, I have a hard time changing dirty diapers to this day.
But yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You're not into nuclear waste, are you?
I kind of avoid it as most I can with grandchildren.
There you go.
Fortunately, grandma's around. She's I don't know, built for that or just willing to go in. I don't
Darling,
know.
They have a present for you.
But I have been home on occasion alone with the boy.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I've done my share, but I don't – well, I'd be completely disingenuous to say I've done my share. Apologize to Julie and to Sarah and to everybody else who knows me.
So that means you've done one, right?
I've done more than one.
Okay,
I've done three or four with that little guy because he it's a napping thing. You leave him with me when he's napping and then, you know, it's a toxic waste dump when he wakes up.
Woohoo!
Yeah. But he's a good guy. He's finally getting expressive and smiley and fun, so that's all good.
Yeah.
So you're back from Hotlanta, huh?
It was not hot. It was the coldest it was ever.
It's winter.
It snow flurries when we arrived, just going like, what?
That happens there. I've been there. Yeah.
That was a shock to me. I'm sitting there going, like, this is the South.
Yeah, it is the South.
But it is like really, really, really cold. I'm like, this is not Wisconsin.
Do you not have enough clothes?
I did not.
No, you didn't.
Right I did not bring clothes for 29-degree weather. I was kind of like, wow, this is like double-layered sweatshirt
Yeah, that
stuff.
Can make it quite painful.
Yeah.
But you had a good time. Met a lot of people, did a lot of meetings.
I think I slept a couple of hours. It was awesome. I mean, it would take too long to share, but we had 45,000 college students, and they encountered God in a pretty significant way. I mean, it was really wonderful to see just their genuine passion for God. And they ended up taking on this whole cause of, are we going to stamp out slavery on the planet? And that out of college kids, they raised $3.2
million. 45,000 kids, $3.2
million
to stamp
came up
out
with
slavery. That human trafficking kind of
yeah.
stuff? Or, oh, okay.
Yeah, we're just going like, but I'm sitting here going like, wait a minute. I was a college pastor for a lot of years. College kids don't exactly.
Well, that was Pepperdine, dude. That was a little more expensive than some college.
I understand that. But they would also have more means and more in their wallet, and they don't part with it all that
they
much.
They don't part with it easily.
Yeah. Oh. And I'm sitting there going like,
you got to put gas in that Ferrari, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. It was awesome.
Wow.
To just kind of see how deeply a lot of them were just moved with the sense of going like, no way, we're going to do something about this.
Cool.
And it was just fun.
Cool.
So, yeah, great time.
Sounds great.
Too cold.
Too cold for you.
Yes.
Well, I enjoyed the dialogue on the spiral of silence that went on the blog, and some of it just emails that came to us personally. But people really had – if you haven't read it, go back to the – people say, I didn't know you can make comments on the blog, and where's the blog? So for those of you that are technically challenged or computatorially challenged or whatever, IT challenged.
Wow, that's a new world.
At thegodjourney.com, you'll find a listing for every podcast. At the bottom is a thing for comments. You can make them or read what others have commented on by clicking on the comment button. And
wow, you've launched a generation of bloggers.
I don't know what's happened. Well, the forum kind of got into a rough spot, although it's in a better spot now. But I think people have kind of gravitated from the forum because the wonderful thing about blog comments is if they get to be disgustingly nasty, I just don't approve them. I just don't put them on. I'm for a healthy conversation, and we didn't make the forum a safe place because we kind of wanted it to safe police itself, but that probably didn't work out the best. So I am the dictator of the comment section on the blog. So.
Benevolent one?
I let most of it through. Yeah, I do. But if it's just a nasty bunch of accusations that have no bearing.
We get those?
Very few, to be honest. Very few. I think I've not approved about 4 comments in 5 years. So that's not bad.
That's not bad.
It's not much policing. It is if there's a problem. So,
well.
But so,
what do they have to say?
Well, a lot of it was their own experience with it, and then it began to take a wonderful kind of direction change. It was Fiona wrote this: "I was verboten to raise anything that might have been construed as critical of our leaders, which included the concept that their teaching might be questionable or that self-interest might play a part." Gee, imagine. Can't raise that.
Self-interest, really?
Stretching out your hand against God's
will. Really?
Oh, that gets you killed. When I spoke of what I'd discovered about tithing and scripture to my friends at church, I became regarded as rebellious. The only reason I spoke up was that I was so convinced.
That's tyranny.
The only reason I woke up was that I was so convinced that what we'd been taught as truth was in fact a lie. And after so many years that I couldn't stay silent any longer. I think if people still entertain any doubt, if they still don't trust their own conclusions about Scripture when it goes against all that's being taught by their leaders, or if they're not convinced God has shown this to them, they won't bring it up. I was very much like this before, and only God can draw us into the place where we will do an about-face and speak up and pay the price. But I'm overjoyed to have paid that price, a small one compared to that which others pay for other things, and it came to a better place, and that many of my friendships have been preserved in the process, despite me being dissed from the pulpit. So, wow, that's boldness.
A diss from the pulpit, that's a good one.
Yeah, have you ever done any dissing from the pulpit?
You know, I probably did and should be ashamed of it. I don't remember dissing anyone. I've been dissed. I've been on the receiving end of that.
I've done some dissing.
Have you?
Oh, boy, back in the day. Yeah, I don't know if I still do it. I hope not. I'm not nicking any pulpits for one thing. So that helps keep the opportunity to a minimum. But well, you're just trying to, you know, point out a problem, and it's from a personal conversation. And I didn't point anybody out by name. Never did that. But it was clear. It was not unclear. And I thought I was a pretty generous.
We left no innuendo unturned.
I thought I was a benevolent despot. But the longer I go on, I'm not sure there is such a thing. This is what Rosa said. This podcast articulates what I've lived for 10-plus years working for a Christian mission organization that took on the personality of its founder with a capital F. How many times I cringed at another staff worker being rebuked while they weren't around to defend themselves, and I said nothing. It only caused me to hide my true self and put more energy into performing, both for approval and, I believe, the fear of rejection. Often wonder why I stayed so long, but maybe it was what was needed so there would be nothing left of me and God could do his healing work. And I've discovered what it means to be loved, really loved. Mm. What I enjoyed about that, I tell you, how many of us have sat in meetings hearing somebody dissed, wanting to speak up, and don't do it? Just because... And I tell you what, these organizations, when you talk, particularly a lot of really slick, big organizations are often driven by that. When you hear the stories of staff people and pastors, they're on some of the well-known celebrity Christianity kind of people in a room, how much they'll diss people in their own congregation, make fun of them, and the whole repertoire of the staff is to kind of make fun as a comic release, I guess, from what's going on. It happens a lot, and I remember being in situations where I let people say things about other people and didn't speak up. Just, you know, I don't know, I had a compelling desire to. I just kind of like, yeah, it didn't seem right to me. I hope we move on and try and move on, but never address it. And then I became the target of that. You kind of go, oh, yeah, there might have been the time to fix this before I was the target of it, for sure.
You know, I think it's so hard to know exactly what to do in those situations, because sometimes I think there is wisdom, like, you know, a gentle word turns away, you know, wrath. And you're just like, okay. But at the same time, if you don't nip something in the bud, sometimes it just keeps growing into something yucky.
Yeah.
And I think the challenge is when do you have the courage and the discernment to go, wait a minute, how do I call attention to this without this embarrassing that person and making it into a whole other issue? And I think a lot of times we're just going like, gee, I don't really see how that's going to turn out very good. And so people back off, and yet then it just continues to pervade.
Yeah. And it is, there's a certain element of humor in making fun of people who aren't in a room. I mean, there's a certain amount of humor that's not healthy for sure, but people get caught in it. And yeah, when people are being run down and they're not even present in the room, how destructive is that? Because you're destroying a whole set of relationships the other person's oblivious to, hasn't a clue that other people are feeling that way about him.
But. Yeah, and then, I mean, I don't know anyone who wants to say, oh, yeah, please turn your gun sights on me.
Yes.
Yeah. Please. So I'll speak up right here. This will be great.
Let me jump in front of the guy with the guns on him and say, no, I'd rather. Yeah.
I think that's the biggest challenge is I think, you know, I don't know that we have a planet of conflict avoiders. It's just I think those situations are really hard to know exactly what to do in. I mean, I think that's why this whole condition, you know, breeds itself.
Yeah, one lady wrote me. I won't use her name because the situation is kind of current, I think, and I just wouldn't want anybody to figure out who it is. She said, this podcast could not be timelier for my husband and me. He's a worship arts pastor, which is kind of
– Hey.
Worship arts. I guess that's a cut above your basic worship pastor.
It is.
Huh?
It includes more than singing.
I didn't know worship needed pastoring, but okay. It's like having a facilities pastor.
You've been away for a while.
Really?
You've been away for a while.
Pastored. I guess I
You've been away for a long time. You've been away for a while.
Anyways, a worship arts pastor, and we have been in the process of being undone and remade by God in the last 2 years. He had a spiral of silence moment in staff meeting this week when he expressed a different opinion on a subject.
Uh-oh.
The speaker became angry and aggressive, while the other two present, sadly the senior pastor and the executive pastor, this isn't even the head honcho, were absolutely silent. His overarching feeling was that of being alone. Listening to your podcast reminded me that the missing ingredient is freedom, relational freedom. No one in that room feels safe, so no one is free to be fully who they are. I want my heart to grow in love, and some layers have been peeled back that allow me to see these folks and their need for the freedom they can only find in relationship with Father.
Yeah, so much of the time in situations like that, I had some of them in Atlanta. We're just going like, gosh, why is, you know, with all these other marvelous things happening, why is that one going weird? And it really is about fear and control. You know, it seems like the person that creates that, you know, permeability of don't speak.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, they're terrified inside.
Yeah.
And I think if you can know that, if there's the capacity at all to step back and see that person, you know, potentially through God's eyes. And I don't want that to be cliché, but just when you know that that's really what's going on. You do have a grace to speak from a different standpoint. I don't have to get into a sword fight.
Yeah.
I have to find a way. It's like, Lord, how do I help give security to this person right now? Because otherwise, we're going to get a sword fight or silence.
Yeah, I love what she put her finger on. No one in that room feels safe, and so no one is free to be fully who they are.
Yeah,
I think that's just a great statement. I mean, if the real goal of Jesus loving us, changing us, relational reality, it's that people have to feel safe enough to be really who they are and know they're not going to be punished for seeing things differently, for having a different point of view, for whatever. If it's true that you're going to be punished for being honest, then we'll all become just
dishonest
facsimiles of ourselves, or leave the environment, or just get away. And I love that you put the finger on that. And then Susan took it a little bit step further. I'm realizing that I'm still dealing with the spiral of silence inside myself. I am slowly, make that very slowly, growing and even able to be honest with myself. There's stuff in my heart that I have so deeply hidden, I think, oh, so risky. But I'm constantly amazed at how kind and loving Abba is and encouraging me to be when he coaxes and welcomes my true thoughts to the surface. It seems that he often has to be rather sneaky about it to get around my inner Pharisee, evidently not yet fully ectomized. Terms are going,
Pharisectomized.
Yeah, she said, my Pharisee has not been fully ectomized. I'm so grateful for these conversations and hope that someday I will see this pattern fully broken inside and be able to fully apply it to my wonderful adult kids and others around me. To really be honest herself inside. I had this conversation with someone recently, and something that I'd recognized in myself. I used to go away from so many conversations when I felt like the pressure was on and, you know, I was being criticized or something was going on. And I'd go away from a conversation knowing the things I wished I would have said. You know what I mean?
Oh, the post-game wrap-up.
Yeah, it's like... Never occurred to me in the room, so it wasn't
what if I had said this?
It wasn't like I thought about it and didn't say it. It was I didn't think about it till 3 hours later or 20 minutes later driving away, and I'm going, ooh, I wish I'd said that.
Yeah, that would have been great.
And that probably would happen to me 100 or more times a year. And I was thinking, you know, in the last 5 years, I can think of one occasion of that.
Only one?
One.
Okay, wow.
And I won't tell you what that is, but you were there, and it wasn't you.
You were not I'm sure it was me.
You were not the problem. No, you were not the problem. In fact, we had a good laugh about it on the way home, if you remember the most hilarious moment in our life from the last 3 or 4 years.
no, I don't remember that.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll remind you off air. Anyway. But other than that, I'm going, you know what? I pretty much, and I think that's what she means by the internal silence, the spiral of silence thing. I'm pretty much okay now with whether people like me or don't like me. That I do think of the things I want to say. I'm not so focused on surviving the moment, which I think I was in the past, or, you know, I felt so self-aware that I wasn't aware of what myself was saying, what the inner self was saying. And I love the fact now that I'm in some pretty tense conversations now and then, and, you know, people on the road got some significant questions and things in their life. And I don't go away from those now going, oh, you know what, this would have been really good to say in that moment, or this would have been really good. It's like, man, I feel like I am having enough sentience in the moment, if that's a word, in the moment, to actually say the things that God's put on my heart to say to people. And I'm really grateful
That's wonderful. I think really that the challenge is I think most of us are banished to the post-game commentary. I wished I would have. And I think the problem is, man, you can stir up a whole lot of strife inside yourself doing that. I mean, sometimes you got to process, but a lot of times you're getting processed.
Yeah, I think it's a big part of it. The other part I think says to me, if I'm doing stuff like that, it really is saying to me, wow, I'm not myself in that setting. Why am I not myself? If I can think of the thing to say later, then really the issue's in here. I like that. Not it's out there. You people are making it unsafe for me. No, it's that I need your love to feel safe. And if you have enough of God's, I guess you don't need enough. You still appreciate it, but you don't have the need for it in the sense that I've got to be someone different for you to like me.
Right.
And I haven't helped you at all.
Well, I mean, I think there's sometimes you can be secure in God's love. And because of that, you don't have to pick a fight.
Yeah.
You can just let it go. Sort of like, well, that's not really going to work there, so I'll just let it go. I think that can be healthy sometimes. I think to be able to know in those moments, you know, it'd be nice to say, well, Lord, what should I say? I think, you know, I wish I could dissect the Lord part of me and the me part of me a little better than that.
Yeah.
And just the honest bit of going like, well, am I living honestly in this relationship? And if I'm not, what do I do about it?
Yeah. God, more or less what I'm going to do about it, God, what do you need to change in me? What's going on here that with that person or in that environment, I'm not free enough to be who I truly am? Mm-hmm. And some of those environments are probably definitely toxic. And God might say, you just don't need to be in that environment. That might be true.
Yeah, that's an okay conclusion, but, you know, just be careful.
Yeah, because there's environments I've removed myself from saying, I just don't want to be in that conversation with those people anymore. I don't think – and it's not because I haven't tried to make a difference there. I think I have. But it's just not healthy for me to be in that environment. And I think we get the freedom to say that. But I like looking first inside saying, what about me? You just said, what about me, God, isn't free enough?
Check for the splinter first or the log in our own eye.
To be honest in that situation, to risk what I need to risk. Why is it safety always? Why is it? And I think people who are vocational, some of these people on staffs or mission groups, whatever, a lot of it's just vocational. Man, if I cross the wrong T here, not the wrong I, I'm out of here. I don't have a job.
Yeah, my T will get crossed.
Yeah, and that's a bigger risk, obviously, than just so-and-so, you know, doesn't like me anymore. But I still think, how do we see God leading us in those things? And if we're not in environments that let people be safe enough to be fully free to be who they are, then we're not serving them. We're not helping them. You've said a lot here. If you've convinced someone against their will, you haven't convinced them still. I mean, they're still going to go out of that room and do whatever it is that they're going to do. And I think, man, I find when I was reading through the blog and thinking back to the Spiral of Silence podcast, it just made me increasingly hungry for the kind of environments that are just filled with, you know, honesty and openness and people not having to be afraid, not, you know, being able to raise whatever issue you need to raise, notice what you need to notice, question what you need to question, and be in an environment with people where that's okay. And in my life, help provide environments like that for others.
That just, to my knowledge, that just isn't out there with an address someplace. Someone's got to create that environment. Someone has got to start planting some flags of just communication that it's safe and demonstrating that it's safe. And then kind of protecting the conversation if all of a sudden, you know, someone's chucking a spear from outside.
Yeah.
I mean,
calling it to question. Yeah. Calling up the moment. Exactly. Yeah. You got to point it out.
I think I've had a really neat last 2 weeks, just a lot of different conversations with people that, you know, I mean, I didn't go looking for these. They just sort of happened. And just being able to dial things down to the simplicity of, you know what, this really isn't more about anything than love and learning to love. I mean, if you kind of center on that, there's a lot of things that do fall into place in an appropriate way. If you're off center on some other issue, and there are other things to do, but when that is no longer center cord, golly, you can have all kinds of stuff go weird. But when you're sitting there going like, you know what, Lord, am I knowing one that I am loved? And am I looking in this situation to love? Man, those have been brilliantly fun arenas in which you're going like, it's easier. The person is feeling a little more secure. That they're getting something of their own security in this. So I'm getting reality. It's no fun being in a conversation and then going like, well, I don't know if what they said was real.
Yeah, I think the worst day I can imagine is having one of my kids over to the house for a day, and even like a birthday or Father's Day, and making nice to me and giving me presents and cards and say sweet things, and then find out 3 or 4 days later that I had said something 2 weeks ago that had hurt my daughter or my son or offended them. And so we over here had this big pretend kind of day, and I can't imagine anything worse than not knowing where my kids really are. And if they're frustrated at me, I'd much rather know that than find out later that they're carrying that and I don't know it. Same thing true with Sarah. The love, when you get to the Galatians 5, it's for freedom that Christ has set us free. It's not freedom so we can just do any blasted sinful thing we want to do, and that's the essence of freedom. It's freedom to be who we really are, and that's bondages and strengths all in the mix of that. And Jesus' ability to party with sinners wasn't because he set up a pulpit and you give them a lecture and try and make them different. He was with them so they were really who they were, and that's where conversations would start that would help turn the tide in people's lives if God wants to turn a tide.
You think of a relationship that's odd or strange, or it's what you're describing. I actually heard a good friend give some advice in a situation to a dad who was just feeling totally estranged from like his teenager, feeling like, you know, he's been too busy, but whatever. But there hasn't been enough relationship to keep the glue.
Yeah.
And he's just feeling disconnected and frantic about it. And you're just going like, well, that's probably not helping. That's probably adding to the mix of this. And he just said, you know what? He said, if your daughter was in an emergency, you would stop everything and you would take her right to the hospital. You would, if it was an emergency. We said, dude, you have an emergency. It is that relationship. But you don't need to go to the hospital. But you need to stop everything and you just need to be there. And you need to let her know that you're aware that there's a big, huge disconnect. And you don't know exactly why it is, and it might be all your fault. And it's like, as opposed to justifying yourself, defending it or whatever,
yeah,
just you're saying, hey, I care, I love you, I'm here, what do we need to do? And then can you relate in a way that there's no reprisals? If she starts to tell you, will you just be quiet and hear it? And listen, and just let it be there. Because if all of a sudden it becomes an argument,
the disconnect.
Oh, you're gone.
Yeah,
it's like, well, see, it's exactly why. And it's like, that is so hard. I mean, I listened to that. And I went, that was absolutely brilliant advice. I sat there going, like, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
But I also thought, golly, I think that's probably going to be really hard. Because what if the person who's kind of offended, they have their own miscues in what's going on? You're not exactly supposed to just say, oh, yeah, you know, you're wrong, but okay, you're right. That doesn't bring healing. But if there isn't an environment where it's like, you know what, you're safe enough that you don't have to fight back when someone says something that you disagree with, I don't see a lot of those.
And I think probably the parent-child relationship is the most difficult one for this, what you're saying, because most of we've set up our relationship with our kids as a power thing. I'm more powerful than you, and yeah. I'm right, and you're the kid. And so when the kids, there's a relational disconnect, and I think it's all your fault, and you want to tell me what a creepy dad I am, then it's often like, hold on a minute. You know, it's not about me telling you to clean your room. It's about you actually cleaning your room. And, you know, going down that road, I think it is very, very hard. And if you're not whole enough inside to have that conversation, like you said, you're better off not having it than end up defending yourself and pushing them even further away. But to me, that's really the challenge. Because friend to friend and other relationships where you just feel like, hey, we can both see it differently and it's okay. With family and how we act both affects each other's sense of well-being in the home. If one's being...
And it's not just for a day.
Yeah. And it goes on every day.
I mean, I think that's the biggest challenge is... When something gets fried and you leave it like that, it gets hardened, and then it really is hard. It really is hard to sort of soften that ground back up.
Somehow you have to give you, the kid, the family, a mulligan. I mean, for those of you who don't golf.
It's a golfing term.
It is a golf. For those of you that don't golf, I play a lot with people that don't play a lot of golf. And, you know, they're going to be purists out there. They're going to hit every shot. So they've knocked one in the trees, and they've gone out in the trees and knocked another one that's deeper in the trees, and they've knocked another one in the trees. A mulligan is, why don't you just go back to the last bad shot, start there, and just start playing again. And I find myself saying that to so many people who
take
call me with so much stuff in their life that's broken or hurting. And I'm saying, you know what? You need to wake up tomorrow morning and just give yourself a mulligan. You're so deep into this question, that question. You don't even know how to sort out any of that stuff anymore. And I think relationally, things get so complicated now. You just say, you know what? If we're going to survive this relationship, we just need to reset it. We just need to restart.
Yeah.
We may never be able to. I want to hear what you think about that. Hopefully you want to hear what I think about that. And at the end of the day, maybe we just need to re-tee the whole thing, because I don't know that we're going to sort it out to our satisfaction, but we really do. If we're going to go on, find a way to go on. That's healthy and constructive.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I may be divulging too much, but uh-oh. My brother and my dad,
let's say just two nameless people from the Midwest.
No.
Okay.
No, because the reason I want to share this is I think it will honor both of them, but I think it's probably very parallel out there for a lot of people and how they might have relationships. My brother and my dad have had really been estranged for, gosh, decades. I don't know how much time I've logged trying to be peacemaker, reconciler, bridge builder, and just going like, you know, whatever. It's not going to happen in my lifetime.
Yeah, I hear.
And I'm gonna have a meaningful friendship with both of them, and then I'm gonna not just participate when it's rag on the other.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think things got to a quieted down place, but it's like my dad. He wanted to finally reconnect with my brother, but I think he was kind of scared to do so. Too much time had gone.
Yeah.
He didn't know what to say, and I'm sympathetic with that, but I'm sitting here going like, how do I just lower the threshold so it doesn't feel like pole vaulting? It's just a step. Just call him and just say that. Don't need to say something else. Just call him. If that's what you want to do, just say, hey, I don't even know what to say. I just wanted to call you.
So it wouldn't be like calling him and just saying, hey, I want to reconnect with you if you would stop being such a jerk.
I'm with you on that one. That would be really good. And it was just interesting because I think the need to justify ourselves on all accounts is so deep in most all of us as far as just – That need for self-validation, if you don't feel like that is a gully washer being met by Jesus, we do try to eke it out of each other or our situations where I just want to, you know, I want to feel like I'm justified or it's fine. But man, does that ever make relationship really hard to reconnect? Because I think what you're saying is there's like, no, you do kind of need a mulligan. I don't know that you're going to sort the last 9 holes out.
Yeah, really?
I mean, that's probably not helpful. That's going to stir up a little more. You might start throwing your clubs, you know. It was beautiful to hear my brother on the backside because I didn't know that my dad actually had called him. Hmm. It was awesome to hear my brother my brother's in tears.
Hmm.
It's like somehow – the pain of 20-some years of estrangement had been melted.
Neat.
And a sense of going, you know what? you know, can we just push reset? I don't know how to sort all that stuff out. Can we not go all there? Because I experienced a very different reality than you, and I saw it different. And so let's not say it's that. Let's just, if you want to start over, let's start over. That's kind of what they did. And I sat there going like, well, where did that come from? You know, it's like, hallelujah, Jesus. But yeah. But just go, it was just, I think there was grace extended to both of them in a way that I just went, that was beautiful.
Yeah, somehow the relationship's got to become more important than the pain that got into the relationship. And if both of you can kind of own that, I mean, obviously this is far worse if, you know, one person molested the other person. And just
I'm not exactly sure what to do. We're not talking about that.
That's a bigger issue, obviously. But in normal human relationship things, when we see things differently and we have different ambitions or desires for outcomes and see things differently, yeah, that kind of stuff happens a lot.
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure everyone's going to find a real easy sense of agreement. Really? You think someone's going to be perfect in a relationship? Really?
Well, I want them to be, since I am working so hard for that.
Right. not on my best day do I think I'm ever going to bring that to a relationship. And if I'm smart, I'm not really going to be using that as a stick of measure of what I hope is. It's like if you can just realize this, you know what? There's going to be bumps, bruises, hard spots, and all that stuff. And that's just because what's in us. But it can be loved to a place of meaningful change, and that's great. You know, if you can just kind of commit, say, well, I own that, I did that, sorry, I don't know why I did that. I sometimes say, well, sometimes we do, but sometimes you're like, I don't know why I there's some things I do that you're like, I'm just a nutcase right then. I don't know why I did that. Did that. I'm sorry. I don't think that helps to say to the person that's hurt, because I think that doesn't justify anything. They're like, you don't get a free pass.
I'm not giving you one till you earn it.
But
it
relationally, if you can extend that in a relationship, golly, I think that mends so many broken stuff.
And, you know, I think all that we're talking about here, but particularly relationships that are broken and finding your way into healing with them, there really is an element of that of not, oh, I'm going to go fix every broken relationship I have. There's really, I think, a moment of, what is God asking me to do? And is there something on my heart about this relationship? And words like, I miss you, or I'm sorry, they go a long ways in rebuilding relationships with people. But if there's no grace on the other side of that, then, yeah, if they're saying just as a pass, then maybe it's still not a relationship that's ready to be reconciled yet. I think that's also true. So there's got to be a sense of where God's put a thing on my heart. And the thing may not be, Wayne, I want you to go reconcile with so-and-so. I think it's probably just you waking up and over a period of days, you just miss that person.
Yeah.
And then you say, you know, I'm going to initiate some kind of contact because it's coming from a real place in my heart, not just I've got to fix every broken thing going on. You know, Alan on the blog, and I'm not sure it was this blog, to be honest. I don't have that noted here. A guy named Alan.
Somewhere in cyberspace.
Yeah, it's one of our past podcasts, but I don't know if it was the same Spiral of Silence, but I think it applies. He quoted George MacDonald, which is one of my favorite guys to read back in the day, one of the old geezers. And I'm just going to quote a little bit of what he said. I'm going to read the whole thing because some of it's, I mean, George MacDonald's writing back in the day where they didn't have editors trying to make the language flow a little more smoothly. But I'm going to read a couple of sentences and then a bit of a paragraph. He said, I have no desire to change the opinion of any man or woman. That really caught me.
Oh, I want to meet that man.
I have no
desire. I want to meet that man.
No. And that let everyone, for me, hold what he pleases. So I'm not – you think what the way you want of me. And then he says this, let the Lord himself teach them, I say. And to me, that little bridge, if you read Romans 14, early part of 15 in the Message, you'll get an awful lot of this language from Paul. Paul just talking about have your own journey. Don't impose it on another person. It's a whole lot of if there's changing to be done, let God do it. And I hear that reflected in this. And then he said this at the end, which I think just really made it happen, made it click for me. Our business is not to think correctly, but to live truly. Then first there will be the possibility of our thinking correctly. One chief cause of the amount of unbelief in the world is that those who have seen something of the glory of Christ set themselves to theorize concerning him rather than to obey him. In teaching men, they have not taught them Christ, but taught them about Christ.
Whoa.
I love that. It's not about living correctly. It's not about getting everybody to think correctly. It's about living truly.
That's deep, dude.
And it's about following him. I'm reading Jeremiah today, and I've loved Jeremiah since I was a kid. I loved that guy. I loved what he went through.
He would have liked to have known that.
Yeah, he didn't have anybody else who
was. No, I was going to say.
But God was speaking through Jeremiah to Israel, saying, all I wanted you to do was follow me. And it wasn't like follow all the law, do all the sacrifices. Like what I wanted you to do was follow me. And that's, I think we've somehow cheapened that, even in our Christianity. What following Jesus means is, well, you derive all the New Testament principles and you obey them. Instead of, it means to follow him. It means there's a person, a presence in your life that wants to make himself known. And when he nudges Wayne this way, Wayne goes that way. And when he nudges Wayne this way, Wayne goes that way. And when it becomes about following him, not about teaching about him, not about theology, not about doctrine, not about thinking right, but living truly, I found an awful lot of freedom in those words. Alan, thanks for posting them.
That is profound, because I do think that, you know, when it's about God, it's about doctrine, about all this, then you got to start scoring all the tests to measure up, as opposed to actually having a relationship, which you really can't put on a test.
Nope.
But you can have.
Yep.
And there's a lot of people taking tests. They're not doing the same dimension in terms of just real relating.
Yeah.
And it's like, to live truly, it's like, guess what? That will mean that it's not flawlessly, and you might need to own some stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but that's true.
Even Paul wrote, Paul's the Corinthians thing about knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. And, you were talking about someone earlier today, that incredibly wise man theologically, but so arrogantly toxic when you're near him that it's just revolting. And I think that what Paul's saying, if this is just about your getting your theological ducks in a row, you're dangerous in the world.
Dude, lock and load, shoot those ducks.
If it's about changing other people's opinions to think like you think as an expression of your love for them, you're really twisted in a variety of ways. Like George MacDonald reminding us, you know what? It's not about changing other people's opinions.
See, if my job is to follow him, then I don't really know exactly how I can continue to do that while I'm so focused on changing you.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about that, it's like, if I just keep it simple, if my job is to be true and to follow him as best I'm able, knowing that, guess what? There'll be some bumps, bruises, scrapes, and getting lost. But if I can be true, if I can be honest, if I can be humble with that, just say, hey, Lord, I don't need to fix everyone else. My loving them and following him will probably be more of a help to that process than all the splinter picking out of their eyes I'd love to do.
Bottom line, your example is 100 times more powerful than your words.
Yeah.
It's not what you're saying. It's how you're living. And I think the fear of this is the only one that really did this well in the history of the world is Jesus, and he got killed for it. So, you know, I think that's the risk of
boys and girls, go out there, have fun.
That's why we don't feel safe sometimes. You know, it's not safe to live truly in the world. Not everyone's going to love you, but they're not going to hate you because you're a manipulator of them.
Oh, I mean, I got to tell you, this last week in Atlanta, I had so many really marvelous relationships, I think, because of these dynamics of going like, you know what? I got to enjoy someone else's lack of agenda, just being true.
Hmm.
And I got to bring that same thing. And that's not most business meetings.
Yeah.
I mean, just really? It's more like, how do I get what I want? How do I close you? How do I manipulate you? How do I negotiate here? And you're just going like, no, how do you just be yourself? And the joy, I mean, those moments were so amazing because they just didn't have all the junk that makes them less than amazing.
Yeah.
Because they were just honest, true. It was, wow, what a gift of just being able to get a glimpse of what's just there.
And what happens where people freely, authentically, openly choose to be part of something? It's such a million times better than anybody you've drug into it by your own conniving, scheming devices.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Living truly. That dog will hunt.
traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.